Not only is Friday Mike Malloy's holiday, but so is Saturday, so is Sunday, and so is Monday, apparently, because it's the holiday weekend, and Mike is playing hooky. Instead, you got me. Greetings, truth seekers. Welcome to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your very friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, in for Mike Malloy tonight, broadcasting live from the left coast in beautiful downtown Burbank, the beautiful studios of AM KTalk AM 1150. Glad you could join us. We have, it's going to be another big show tonight. It's just one of those. You know, and I know that y'all have been probably watching the Republican National Convention all week. You need to decompress from that. You probably want to talk about it. You probably got a lot on your mind about it, a lot of thoughts and opinions. And I want to let you use your public airwaves to share them today as much as possible. Sadly, I've got a lot of things on my mind, too, after this week. So we're going to have a lot to talk about, and but I will try to get in your calls as much as I can tonight at 877-520-1150. That's the number tonight. Don't use Mike's normal number. Use 877-520-1150. I will try, like I say, to get to you as much as I can. You can also tweet me on the Brad blog if you follow me. If you don't follow me, you should follow me. I am the Brad blog over on the Twitters. We've also got a Facebook page over there at the Brad blog. So if you can't find me, you've got only yourself to blame. Then you need to come on by, if you are listening to the show, if you're anywhere near a computer, come on by BradBlog.com, where we have, as usual, our lively chat room set up on the front page, or close to it anyway. You'll see the Mike Malloy item at the top. Click on through. You'll find the chat room, and you'll find, it looks like it's filling up already. A lot of folks there. Orangutan, our friend Orangutan is there. Good to see him. Cosmic Michael is there. Margot, of course, and Desi are both in there helping to moderate tonight. And so lots of fun. A little bit later in the show, I'm going to be speaking with, I want to say I'm looking forward to this interview, but in fact I'm not looking forward to this interview. I'm going to be speaking with Governor Don Siegelman, former Alabama governor, former Democratic Alabama governor, who is just days away now from heading back to prison for the next 6.5 years after being railroaded by Karl Rove and the Bush Justice Department and now the Obama Justice Department. He is hoping that Barack Obama will pay attention to what's going on. He's hoping his daughter has started a petition that even if you can't hear the my interview with him in the next hour, try to stop by donsiegelman.com. Click through the link to ask President Obama for a pardon in this case. It is outrageous what has happened to Don Siegelman over these last 6 years or so. The U.S. attorney out there in Alabama who originally started his prosecution for something that has never been a crime before in the history of this country. The original prosecutor was married to the chief of staff for Don Siegelman's opponent, Bob Riley, who eventually took over the governorship in Alabama. We'll talk about the story and tee it all up and let you know what's going on here. But you can find out very quickly. If you do nothing else, stop on by Don Siegelman. .org, actually, I think it is, or .com, you'll find it, and hit that petition and put your name on it, and let's do right by Don Siegelman. It's a horrible story. What Karl Rove and gang did to him is just a horrible, horrible story. His story also, by the way, involves one of the very first cases that I am aware of electronic election fraud in the modern era. Don Siegelman went to bed one night, thought he was the winner of his election in 2004, woke up and was told, oh, we found a whole bunch of new votes on the Diebold touchscreen voting machines in some county or another when nobody was there looking. That's a part of his story that he doesn't get to talk about very often. We've talked to him about it before. In any case, that's all coming up a little bit later in the show. And, and I should mention, by the way, when you stop by the bradblog.com chat room, it is sponsored tonight by Scribble Live. Not sponsored. They have donated the chat room for us to use, the chat room software. We're mighty grateful to Scribble Live, scribblelive.com. It's a very cool chat room. It's very new. We just set it up last time we were in for Mike last month. And we're using it again tonight, so stop on by. Okay. So, as I said, our phone number is 877-520-1150. Write it down. You're probably going to want to get in a thought. Some big news today that we're going to talk about in this hour a little bit as well. Some very big news. Some great victories, frankly. Let's look at the bright side here. Some really great victories. A string of victories. Over the past week or two, even in just the last two or three days, today in Ohio, a federal court has ruled in favor of Barack Obama and the Democrats who had sued the state of Ohio after the state of Ohio had, for some reason or another, just decided to cancel early voting in the 3 days before the election. Just cancel it. Now, it happened to be very popular, hundreds of thousands of voters who happened to be Democratic, many of them minorities, took advantage of the voting in the last 3 days. The Souls to the Polls program that a lot of the African-American churches were running would, you know, after church on Sunday before the election, they'd encourage people to go out and vote on that Sunday. Well, the Republicans came to power in Ohio again, and they just decided they would cancel early voting in the 3 days prior to the election. I interviewed former Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner about that last week. She said that she thought it was very clear this was an effort to stop souls to the polls. So nobody can vote in the 3 days before the election in Ohio under the Republicans' new rules. I should say nobody but active duty military. For some reason or another, they were allowed to vote in the 3 days before the election. Active duty military. Which, by the way, they told 900,000 veterans in Ohio they could go to hell. But active duty military, they're more than welcome to come and vote in the last 3 days. Well, Barack Obama went to court, filed a lawsuit, said, look, if you're going to have early voting for active duty military in the last 3 days, why don't you have it for everyone? And, in fact, a federal judge agreed today with the Obama campaign and with the Ohio Democrats and the DNC that, in fact, the plaintiffs, quote, have a constitutionally protected right to participate in the 2012 election and all elections on an equal basis with all Ohio voters, including active duty military voters. A very good decision today in Ohio. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later this hour. As well, that comes, today's decision, by the way, comes on the heels of some other really great decisions. Was it yesterday? Yeah, seems a long time ago. But on Thursday, a three-judge panel on the U.S. District Court in D.C. found, as I have been arguing forever, that polling place photo ID restrictions disenfranchise minorities and the poor disproportionately, and that's exactly what Republicans were trying to do in putting that law in place. I'll be talking about that some more. A whole bunch of victories. Good news for voters. Never mind Democrats, never mind Republicans. These are good news items for voters, for people who love democracy, for voting rights advocates. And that, by the way, that's who I'm fighting for once again this year. The candidates, they got plenty of support. Who doesn't have enough support? The voters. So I'm working for them this year. Okay, talk about the RNC real quick. I'll take an early break here, and I'll come back and talk about the RNC and this lie fest that took place. Unbelievable lie fest not a matter of whether you disagree with these guys or not, with what Paul Ryan was saying this week. They were just lies. They were big lies. They were huge lies. And I would argue that there is a reason that these guys think they can get away with these lies. There's a reason why they're telling these lies, because they think it's going to benefit them. Fact checkers? Give me a break. They don't give a damn about the fact checkers. I'll tell you why when we come back. You're listening to Brad Friedman on The Mike Malloy Show. Man, it's good to be back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Apparently we're playing requests tonight. That was a request from our listener, GG, I think. He wanted to hear some punk rock Gigantor. So there you go. We aim to please. You know, of all the lies that were told this week at the RNC in Tampa, I know you think the big lies, the Paul Ryan lies, the Mitt Romney lies, the GM plant closing down, all of that. We built it. That was it. The whole thing was a lie. The whole theme was a lie. The biggest and most dangerous lie I'm going to tell you about in the after the bottom of the hour. It wasn't told by Paul Ryan. But, you know, here is, well, at least this was my early working theory, and I'll tell you what it is, as far as why they think they can get away with these just blatant lies. And again, not things that we disagree on, not policy issues, I see it this way, you see it that way. These are blatant lies, you know, like, the plant that closed down, the Janesville, GM plant that closed down that Barack Obama promised to keep open. Well, he didn't promise, but that's the way they paint it. Promised to keep open, but then it's closed a year later, as Paul Ryan said. Well, it was closed a year later. It was closed several months later. It was closed before Barack Obama even got to office to be able to do anything about it in the first place. Easily fact-checked, easily disproven, easily shown to be a lie. 700 and whatever billion dollars cut from Medicare, as Paul Ryan says. Easily shown to be a lie. It wasn't cut from Medicare. It was savings from Medicare. It was the growth, the planned growth of Medicare. It was money that was going to go to insurance and doctors. Nothing was taken away from old people, as Paul Ryan would like to tell you. More insidiously, of course, Paul Ryan, in his own house budget, kept in the very same savings. And yet he's running around telling seniors that Barack Obama is trying to steal your Medicare. And it's working, by the way. They're buying it. They're buying it in Florida. They're buying it in Ohio. They're buying these big lies. So my original working theory is they feel that they can lie because over the last 10 years, the Republican Party has developed their own little insular world where they can make up their own little fantasies. They've got Fox News on the TV. They've got the Drudge Report on the internet. They've got Rush Limbaugh on the radio. And, of course, they've got hundreds and hundreds of clones of each of them, of each of those. On the internet, on the radio, and everywhere else. They feel like they can tell the lies. They can tell these lies over and over again. They won't debunk them on Fox News. They won't debunk them on Rush or on Drudge. They just keep repeating them. And if any of those fact checkers come in and they tell the truth about what's going on, as I just told you about what was going on at the GM plant in Wisconsin, well, of course, that's just the liberal media. Those fact checkers, that's just the liberal media. Don't listen to them. We're telling you the truth here on Fox News, at the Drudge Report, at Rush Limbaugh. And they're counting on the fact that their base will hear that, will be angry enough about that, about these lies that they tell them. And they'll turn out and they'll vote, and that'll be enough to win, particularly in the states they give a damn about. Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan. So nobody's going to correct them. That's what they're banking on. And they've created a little media world on our public airwaves, by the way, where they can tell these lies safely. And they can know that no one is going to dispute them. And if they do, oh, they're just liberal media. Well, over at National Memo today, where, full disclosure here, I write every now and again for them, but LOLGOP, who, by the way, is a great follow on Twitter. If you don't know LOLGOP, go ahead and follow them on Twitter, him or her. I don't know who it is. But here's what him or her wrote. Instead of letting fact-checkers edit their campaign, Romney's team has a better use for fact-checkers, campaign surrogates. The birther scandal shows that debunking lies does little to quell the lie and much more to spread it. It's a tactic Mitt Romney has used effectively for a year now as he's accused the president of, quote, apologizing for America. That never happened. But to debunk the lie, you have to repeat it. It's classic heel look like hell denying it politics. Although modern politicians are generally too smart to repeat lies about themselves, the Romney camp knows the fact checkers will. So how do you dictate what the media will be talking about tomorrow? Make purposely deceptive statements about the issues you want to highlight. What are Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney's biggest weaknesses? Medicare, the auto bailout, a hugely unpopular Congress, and Ryan's record of voting for Bush-era surplus-blowing policies. So Ryan systematically made an attack by assertion rather than accusation about each of those issues. By making these attacks in deceptive ways that either ignored or left out crucial facts, he forced the media to repeat the assertions. From the morning Romney announced Ryan as his running mate, the candidates have been making the assertion that the president funneled or sometimes robbed $716 billion from Medicare to pay for Obamacare. This assertion is a classic half-truth in several ways. The money comes from savings that extend the life of the program. Ryan voted to keep the cuts, but not to fund Obamacare. But you see, we've fallen into the precise trap that Ryan set. We're talking about all of this stuff. We're going to talk about it more. We're going to keep falling into the trap when we come back. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Indeed. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. In for Mike. Crazy indeed, but crazy like a fox. Oh, go figure. Like a fox. You'll work it out, Tony. Think about it. You'll get it. I'm going to tell you, as I promised, what I think was the worst lie, the most insidious lie that was told at the Republican convention this week that I have heard nobody other than me debunk. Nobody. It just laid there. It actually didn't lay there. The people at the Tampa Bay Times forum went crazy when it was said, yelling and screaming and cheering, and yet nobody debunked it. Okay, so we're talking about, however, for the moment, the lies that Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney are telling. And this insidious strategy behind it. This is from the National Memo from a writer who calls themselves LOLGOP, and you can follow them on Twitter. So continuing where we were when we went to the break. So from the morning Romney announced Ryan as his running mate, the candidates have been making the assertion that the president funneled or sometimes robbed $716 billion from Medicare to pay for Obamacare. This assertion is a classic half-truth in several ways. The money comes from savings that extend the life of the program. Ryan voted to keep the cuts, but not to fund Obamacare. But you see, we've fallen into the precise trap that Ryan set. While you and I and the fact-checkers debunk his half-truth, we're ignoring the larger issue. Ryan makes huge cuts to current seniors by gutting Medicaid now and then turning Medicare into a voucher program that passes the costs on to seniors. Point Romney Ryan. Because, you see, we're not talking about that. We're talking about his lie. We're not talking about what he's actually doing, what he's actually calling for. The best part of this super sneaky strategy, writes LOL GOP, is that it's foolproof. Republicans can admit what they're doing. Yet fact-checkers and incredulous Democrats still fall into the trap. Quote, not only was everything Congressman Ryan said factually accurate, but by the Chicago folks highlighting this, they're advancing our argument, said Sean Spicer, the chief spokesperson for the RNC. You see, they've fallen for the trap. And I have to admit, they're right. Look at the one GM factory in Janesville that Ryan brought up, deceptively blaming the president for its closure today, even though it was scheduled to close during the Bush administration. But look, we're doing it again. Instead of talking about the dozens of GM factories the president helped save, or the hundreds of thousands of industrial jobs that the auto rescue protected, we're talking about the one that's closed. Point Romney Ryan. Instead of talking about how Paul Ryan's budget increases the deficit, we're talking about how he voted against the Simpson-Bowles Commission. Instead of talking about Paul Ryan's role in this incredibly unpopular Congress that held the debt limit hostage for a debt deal they won't even honor, we're talking about the U.S. credit rating. These lies are clearly strategically placed, which becomes obvious when you think about what Ryan was really arguing. He wants fewer cuts to government. No, I'm sorry, that's a question. He wants fewer cuts to government? No, of course not. He wants the government to decide which factories stay open? Of course he doesn't. He wants to protect the poor but cut tens of millions of them from Medicaid? These aren't his beliefs. They're his smokescreen. And as long as we're parsing his words, we're not talking about how harmful his vision for America actually would be. And that's obviously what Paul Ryan and the GOP want. The entire convention theme, "We built it," is based on a deceptive misquote from the president. It's nearly impossible to imagine the president lying the way Ryan and Romney do, but if he doesn't find some way to break through to the truth, the real referees in politics, the voters, may end up being swept up in the tide of lies. That's from LOL GOP at National Memo, and I think he or she, whoever LOL GOP is, has a good point. Now, some of the folks in the bradblog.com chat room are asking, well, what do we do now? Let the lies go unchallenged? Well, no, of course not. You don't. They need to be responded to. But I think that Democrats, at least, and the Obama team need to figure out a strategy to deal with this, because when they respond to this, National Memo here is exactly right. You're not talking about the real issues. And I think that the Obama and the Romney and Ryan team know this. That's why they're doing it. There can be no other way to explain it. Our phone number is 877-520-1150 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. These are your public airwaves after all. 877-520-1150. But let me tell you what I find to be the most insidious, the most horrific lie of the week. Do I have it here? Got this queued up? Yeah. This was Governor Nikki Haley. She was speaking on, I believe it was Tuesday. Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina, Republican of South Carolina, where they have tried and tried to institute the most restrictive polling place photo ID restrictions in the country. It used to be in this the state of South Carolina, they already had one of the most restrictive anti-voter rules. You had to identify yourself with one of three documents when you went to vote at the polling place, either a state-issued driver's license or a state-issued photo ID that you could get at the DMV. Or your voter registration card that they would mail to every registered voter in the state. One of those three things you had to have. That has been the law, that has been the voter ID law in South Carolina for some time now. A driver's license, a photo, a state-issued photo ID from the DMV, or the voter registration card. So this year, the law that they passed did away with the third option, the voter registration card, the one that you get after you register to vote when you have to show them ID in order to be able to register to vote, which is already, pay attention here, people, it's already federal law in all 50 states under the Help America Vote Act that if you do not register in person at the clerk's office, your name is flagged. So the first time that you show up at the polling place to vote, you will have to show ID before you vote. Voter ID in and of itself is not a problem, as long as it's reasonable ID. Not just driver's licenses, but also bank statements for those who don't drive, who don't have a driver's license. Paycheck stubs, things like that, to identify yourself. Most states already have voter ID. And the fact that Democrats are out there, and voting rights advocates, by the way, are out there saying, these voter ID laws are outrageous. Once again, you're playing into their hands. Voter ID is not a problem. And America, you know, they hear that. And they hear Democrats complaining about voter ID. And they say, well, why shouldn't you have to be able to identify yourself before you vote? What's the problem with that? Well, there isn't a problem with that in and of itself. The problem is the restrictive ID, the state-issued ID, that these Republicans who are passing these voter suppressions know millions, some 22 million Americans do not have. 22 million Democratic-leaning Americans. The minorities, the elderly, the students, the poor. So you're playing into their hands when you talk about voter ID. It's photo ID restrictions. And the new photo ID restrictions in South Carolina were turned down under the Voting Rights Act by the Department of Justice because it found they discriminated against minorities. Period. If you're an African-American voter in South Carolina, according to the state's own data, you are 20% more likely to lack the type of ID that is needed under South Carolina's new photo ID restriction law. 20% more unlikely to, to have the type of ID needed to vote as compared to white voters. So Governor Nikki Haley stands up at the Republican National Convention this week. And she knows the American people buy into this photo ID stuff because they hear it as voter ID. What's wrong with that? And she tells this huge whopper of a lie that nobody corrects. Nikki Haley, Tuesday at the RNC.
We said in South Carolina that if you have to show a picture ID to buy Sudafed, if you have to show a picture ID to set foot on an airplane, then you should have to show picture ID to protect the one of the most valuable, most central, sacred rights and blessed within America, the right to vote. And what happened? President Obama stopped us.
Okay, huge round of applause. Everybody loves that. After all, she's talking about one of the most, quote, valuable, most essential, sacred rights and blessed rights within America, the right to vote. But she was lying. She doesn't care about the most sacred of all rights, the right to vote. Otherwise, she wouldn't have lied to her people, to the people in the convention, to the people across America who were watching her lie when she said that if you have to show a picture ID to set a foot on an airplane, then you should have to show a picture ID to protect the one of the most valuable rights. Well, guess what? I've heard this over and over again from the Republicans. They love it. They love saying it because everybody buys into it, because I know nobody's going to fact check it, apparently, other than, you know, me. No, you don't need a photo ID to step foot on an airplane. You don't need one. Yes, it will make your life a lot easier. You won't have to be have an extra wanding or whatever it is the TSA is going to do to you. But the airlines in this country are not about to turn away 22 million customers who don't have photo ID. And yet you hear that all the time. You need a photo ID to step on an airplane. You need a photo. No, you don't. You need a photo ID to open a bank account. No, you don't. You need a photo ID to cash a check. No, you don't. You need a photo ID to buy a beer. Wrong. I'll bet I'll have a beer tonight after I get off the air. I'm guessing they're not going to ask me for a photo ID. Yet nobody is out there correcting them. They are lying. They are lying to the American people. I was in a three-day-long Twitter fight with some woman who seemed very, very nice. You can Twitter me at the Brad blog. She seemed very, very nice. She said, no, no, I know this for a fact. You cannot get on an airplane without a photo ID. She was wrong, of course. Eventually, I sent her to the TSA website where you can find the fact that, no, you don't need a voter ID, a photo ID to step foot on an airplane. This is what the election is about, people. It ain't about the horse race. It's about the track conditions. Sometimes it's what the horses leave behind on the track, but it's about the track conditions. And the track conditions in Ohio, in Florida, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, that's what's going to make the difference between what happens in November. And if we don't start understanding this, if we don't start spending at least a tenth of the time that the networks and the news networks now spend on the horse race, on the nonsense that doesn't mean anything, while people are fighting like hell to be able to cast their vote, while 1.6 million voters in the state of Pennsylvania may not be able, registered voters, may not be able to vote this year in Pennsylvania because they don't have the type of photo ID that is now required under the Republicans' photo ID restrictions. That's the whole kit and caboodle, people. Lose Pennsylvania? This thing is over. Do you care? I do. Anyway, we got to take a break. 877-520-1150 is our number. 877-520-1150. This stuff matters. Pay attention. And even in states where it's not going to go for Obama, I don't care. I'm fighting for everyone's vote out there. It's other races other than the presidential, you know. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show.
Lying, cheating, hurting, that's all you seem to do.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. Give us a call if you like, 877-520-1150. We're going to get some of your calls in a moment here. Of course, I was yelling and screaming about this photo ID stuff before we went to the break. But I should add, huge victories, some huge victories. This victory today in Ohio. Federal judge ruling that there will be voting in the last 3 days, early voting in the last 3 days before the election. Hundreds of thousands of voters voted during those last 3 days before the Tuesday election, largely minority voters and Democrats back in 2008. It caused no problem at all for county boards of elections, which the judge found. Because that was the only excuse that the Republicans were giving for this. They said, "Oh, it puts too much of a burden on the boards of elections to be have early voting in the days just before the Tuesday election." Well, nonsense. And that's what the judge found. He wrote, "This court finds that in-person early voting is a voting term that had included the right to vote in person through the Monday before Election Day, and now thousands of voters who would have voted during those 3 days will not be able to exercise their right to cast a vote in person, thanks to the cutoff of the early voting hours for all but military. He went on to call it arbitrary. He said that restoring in-person voting to all Ohio voters through the Monday before Election Day does not deprive active-duty military voters from early voting. Instead, and more importantly, it places all Ohio voters on equal standing. The only hindrance to active-duty military early voting is the Secretary of State John Husted's failure to set uniform hours at elections boards during the last 3 days before Election Day. Now, keep in mind, Secretary of State Husted has been claiming that the reason he had to keep anybody from voting on the weekend across the entire county was because he wanted uniform hours. You know, to be fair, across the whole county. And then when it came to the last 3 days before the election, when only military voters, active duty military voters, were going to be able to vote, he didn't even bother to set uniform hours. He said, oh, it's up to the counties. This is the scam. This is the fight. In Texas, the three-judge panel agreed with the Department of Justice. By the way, it was a unanimous decision. One of those judges was a George W. Bush appointee, agreed with the Justice Department that, in fact, Texas's photo ID restriction law was discriminatory. And this was a case that was made. Did you know that, you know, people say, oh, what's so hard about getting a photo ID? You can just drive to the DMV and get one. It's free. Well, no, it's not free if you don't have the documents that you need to get the free ID. If you have to pay $22 for a birth certificate or $350 for a naturalization papers or a passport. And, oh, by the way, in Texas, some voters, some registered voters, would have to drive 250 miles round trip to get their free ID at the closest state driver's license facility. 250 miles round trip. These are people who don't have driver's licenses. They don't drive. So shine up your walkers, Grandma. You better start walking now because it's a 250-mile round trip to get that free ID from the Texas DMV. Well, not anymore, at least as of now. Three-judge federal panel turned that down yesterday, finding once again that it disenfranchises minority and the poor, as we have told you here for years. I'm Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Don Siegelman is coming up next hour, and your calls as well. Stay tuned. It's the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. I am your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, if only me. Our phone number tonight is 877-520-1150. I've got a few minutes. I'll try to get to some phone calls here. 877-520-1150. Governor Don Siegelman will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. He's about to go to jail for 6.5 years. And if you can't stick around and listen to my interview with him at the bottom of the hour, go on over to donsiegelman.com and sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon him after this railroad that he's been facing for the last 7 years out there in Alabama. We'll talk a little bit about that at the bottom of the hour. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. You can shout out to me on the Twitters. It looks like Jimmy, I never know how to say his name, Aces. We'll call him Jimmy Aces, is listening right now on the Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook. Most importantly for the moment, you can also stop by bradblog.com, where we've got our Scribble Live chat room open. Thanks to the folks at Scribble Live for supplying the chat room. I just took a photograph of our super-duper associate producer, Margot, up above the Pasadena Hills. We are broadcasting live from the left coast from beautiful Burbank as the sun is beginning to set out here. Glad you could join us. Let me see. What do I need to do? Any other business before I go to some... let's go to some phones here. Why don't we do that? yeah, let's go to Anthony in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Anthony, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Brad? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My name's Anthony Antonello. I'm a delegate in northeastern former delegate in northeastern Pennsylvania, and I'd like to share a little bit of what I experienced down there at the RNC. And it's going to take me a couple weeks to get all I documented down there, but it was a total railroad sham, scam, whatever you want to call it. There was absolutely no rules as far as I just got distracted.
No, you know what? I'll help you out. Let me set this up a little bit because I know what you're talking about. So you were a delegate for Ron Paul at the Republican National Convention, and we covered this earlier in the week at Brad Blog. I'll send folks over there. We do have some audio from what happened there if we have time. But basically what I want to set up before you tell what happened to you there, Anthony, okay, what you witnessed firsthand, I want to let people know because we've been covering this at Brad Blog. We've been covering it here on the Malloy Show. What the establishment GOP has been doing to the Ron Paul supporters, no matter how you feel about Ron Paul, what they have been doing to his supporters at these caucuses, they have been shutting down caucuses, they have been arresting Ron Paul supporters, they have been breaking bones, literally, down at the state convention in Louisiana, they were breaking bones, they were stealing the county convention in Clark County, Georgia, they stole the duly elected delegates from Ron Paul in Massachusetts and in other states, including Maine, and at the Republican National Convention, they went in there, they decided to change the rules, which is their right, in the Rules Committee to make it so that in the future, delegates from, non-establishment approved candidates like Ron Paul could not have a say, basically, in the process. Now, there was a mini revolt on Tuesday when this happened. It was pretty amazing what they did. As a matter of fact, Anthony, hang on one second. Let me just play, since I have a moment. Tony, do you have clip number three queued up for me? This was just after... they called for the yays and nays to approve the new rules, and of course you can hear as many yays as nays, and yet the chair of the Republican Party, Mike Reince Priebus, said, oh, the ayes have it, and they moved on. This led to a revolt, and here is a bit of that revolt, and then some of the comments from the Ron Paul supporters in the hallway afterwards.
As a delegate for the state of Maine by 1,000 of my fellow Republicans.
They're fighting in the halls for Romney versus Paul.
It's time that the American people understand that we're all being screwed here. If it can happen to me, if it can happen to Maine, it can happen to anybody and everybody.
You know what? After the way that they treated us, treated the state of Maine, treated us Republicans, they should be worried about how this is going to affect the election.
The people of Maine should be respected. Those voters that put us here, they should be respected. This is a sham.
This is a sham. That's how the Republicans treated their own people at the Republican National Convention this week. If they would treat their own Republicans that way, imagine what they will be happy to do to Democrats in November. So, Anthony, you were one of the delegates supporting Ron Paul at the RNC. So,
yeah, I was,
were you there?
Yeah, I was right there. Sorry, I got distracted. I'm back online.
Good.
What I witnessed there and what I seen, it was absolutely amazing. How far they were willing to take it. To me, it was almost like they were trying to provoke a fight, because it was so bold and so brazen what they did on that floor. And then when that video came out of the teleprompter showing, you know, the eyes have it. Now, how can you possibly have a teleprompter that is saying eyes have it as John Boehner is reading this, saying the eyes have it? How can you possibly take a vote? And when you heard it, the eyes and nays, you know, whether you believe it was the ayes or the nays, it definitely called for a roll call. They ignored whether it be Robert Rules of Order or the House rules. Mm-hmm. They completely ignored everything. I put up
let me just say, Anthony, because we have the videos also at Brad Blog. Literally, you can watch the teleprompter scrolling by. Never mind the fact that Republicans have been, you know, spending the past 4 years pretending that there's something wrong with using a teleprompter, at least when Obama does it, because, you know, he's so stupid he needs a teleprompter, I guess. But you actually get to see all in favor say aye, all in opposed say nay, and then the teleprompter scrolls by. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it, and the resolution is adopted, and they keep going.
So what is the so when you see this, you have to ask yourself, what is the point of even having a convention when, you know, people are calling for division, calling for roll call, and, you know, trying to play by the rules, and they completely got steamrolled. And like I said, it was so in your face that it left me with nothing other than believing that they are literally trying to show us their power, flex their muscles, and say, listen, we understand that you guys have a revolution. You guys are starting to catch on that we're you're starting to catch on to what's going on, but we're going to try to squash that right here and now, and we're going to show you who's boss. And it was such a lack of I don't even know how else to describe it.
No, I hear you, and you're describing it well, Anthony. And here's my question.
It was so censored, too. Let me tell you what I did. I wrote Ron Paul on both of the back of my hands, and I also wrote an 8 by 10 piece of paper, Ron Paul, okay? And I held it above my governor's head as he went to speak and pledged his delegates. Not only did he not say Ron Paul and said, you know, Paul Ryan, instead, they literally cut the feed across the nation because I put up the sign perfectly above his head that said Ron Paul. They cut the feed. The very next day, I was walking around taking pictures, documenting everything that was happening because it was so censored. I put my foot on off the floor onto one step just to take a picture of a personal Romney security guard. I turned around, and there were two in plain clothes security guards, and they were so close to me, I backed up one foot. So now I had both feet off the floor, and they wouldn't let me back on the floor. I said, are you guys kidding me? I said, you've seen me walk by you 10 times. I'm a duly elected delegate of the
Anthony,
state of Pennsylvania.
Anthony, listen, I got to cut you off only because I'm getting to a break, but I want to ask you this before I get to the break, okay?
Yes.
Surely you weren't surprised by the way you were treated
right? I had no delusions about what was going to happen down there, but so, what shocked me was how in your face they let it happen.
Okay, Anthony, so here's my question for you, because I've been covering what has been going on to you guys all year long, because I think it's outrageous what the party establishment has been doing to people who are simply, you know, doing things like showing up at a state convention, following the rules, fighting to follow the rules that are being broken by the establishment. I think it's been outrageous. So do you understand what the Republican Party is willing to do to get their way, and will you, Anthony, and the other Ron Paul supporters listening, will you guys get out there and fight for every American citizen's right to vote, for everyone who wants to vote and to have that vote counted and counted accurately, no matter what party they are from? Will you join me in that fight between now and November, Anthony?
I cannot speak for anybody but myself, and I was personally ashamed of a lot of Ron Paul delegates that thought that they could continue this fight by playing within the rules of the party system. But I am devoted. I'm an investigative journalist, just like you said, rabble-rouser. I do the same thing over here on the East Coast, and I am dedicated to this fight of trying to win back some kind of fairness, individual liberty. There's just so many things that
right.
are wrong
Anthony,
on so many levels.
I hear you, brother. Drop me some email, will you? Go over to Brad Blog. You'll be able to find it over there. You need to keep up this fight for all Americans, because if they're willing to do it to you, imagine what they're willing to do to the rest of the country.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Brad on the Molloy Show. Thanks for the call, Anthony. Welcome back. This is your Mike Molloy Show. I'm not Mike. I'm Brad Friedman. Glad you could join us here. Cambridge, Cambridge Knitter in the BradBlog.com chat room, sponsored by Scribble Live, points out that women have an extra burden when they change their names to get married, and then they have to get a photo ID, because not only if you're forced to get a photo ID before you go to vote, do you have to come up with a birth certificate, but if you're married, you also have to come up with a marriage certificate to show that your name has changed. And some voters have had problems doing that under these voter suppression laws that these Republicans are passing. And if you heard that call from Anthony, I really hope, you know, I really do. You Ron Paul folks are very dedicated to your candidate, which I respect and I admire. And frankly, I respect and admire the fact that you're trying to change your party, that you're trying to take it over from the inside in many cases, as you have, Ron Paul folks are now running the ship up in Nevada in the Republican Party. But the fact is, the Republicans, the establishment Republicans, have shown themselves willing to do anything and everything they can that they need to do to steal elections. And they did it to their own voters, their own Ron Paul voters. They will do it to Democrats. They are doing it to Democrats. They're changing the rules. And if you can apply just even a tenth of the energy that you've applied for your candidate, for Ron Paul, if you can apply even a tenth of that energy towards making sure that every voter who wants to vote in this country gets to vote, and that their vote is counted and counted accurately, that's the real difference. That's the real difference. And that's what your party is trying to keep from happening. 877-520-1150. We're going to be joined, by the way, with Governor Don Siegelman, speaking of what Republicans are willing to do, after the break of the bottom of the hour. But let me see if I can get a quick call here. Mark in San Francisco, welcome to the Mike Molloy Show, sir.
Hi, Brad. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Wanted to bring up the fact that what scares me the most, not only would Romney's administration bring a possible depression and the economic disaster and the theft of the middle class, but what scares me the most is his war cabinet that he's going to assemble and what would happen to us if these guys got back in charge.
It's the same crew. It's the same crew from George W. Bush. Dan Senor, the guy you saw out there apologizing for Iraq, you know, out there saying everything is going well here, it's going great. He's the guy who's running the Paul Ryan campaign. Dan Senor. So it's all the same people. It's John Bolton. It's all your nightmares all over again. If you like that, if you think that was good, if you liked what happened in Iraq, if you liked what happened in Afghanistan, if you liked what happened when, you know, George W. Bush would not pay attention to the warnings about Al-Qaeda before 9/11, if you like all that stuff, great. Vote for Mitt Romney. But make no mistake, that's where we're going. And all of those wars that they refused to pay for, I can't see why they would decide to pay for them this time either.
Well, I'm sure they have no intention of doing that. They'll expect us to pay for it.
Yep.
And the problem is that stakes are higher now. And what's at stake in Iran is going to involve China and Russia. It's more delicate. And to have these guys in charge is an awful scary thought because, these are guys that never went to war. And but they love to throw America and young Americans right into the battle, into the meat grinder.
They sure do, as long as it's not them. I appreciate the call, Mark. I got to run to a break. I appreciate it. Appreciate your thoughts. Brad in for Mike Malloy. Governor Don Siegelman live coming up next.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Scared.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Stuck in the middle with you right here on the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. You might want to stop by our chat room at bradblog.com, sponsored by Scribble Live. Thank you guys for donating that for our use. You can also shoot us some questions on the Twitters. I am the Brad Blog over there, where I hope you're following. okay, former Democratic Governor of Alabama Don Siegelman is about to join us here. From 1999 to 2003, he was the governor out there. He's the only person in the state of Alabama to be elected to serve in all four of the top statewide elected offices, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, and Governor, and he's been serving in Alabama politics for some 26 years. Or at least he was until two of Alabama's United States attorneys began a criminal investigation against him. One of those U.S. attorneys, Laura Canary, was actually the wife of Siegelman's gubernatorial opponent, Bob Riley. All of whom, by the way, were very close friends with Karl Rove. In 2006, Siegelman was convicted on bribery charges after a local hospital executive, Richard Scrushy, gave $500,000 to an advocacy campaign favored by Siegelman to establish a state lottery to help pay for free college education for Alabama's underprivileged children. In exchange, prosecutors contend, Scrushy was appointed to a state hospital board, but that board was one that Scrushy had previously served on under previous Republican governors as well. Though Don Siegelman did not benefit financially from the transaction, prosecutors in the Bush Justice Department and now in the Obama DOJ have argued that the transaction amounted to a quid pro quo. Exactly 113 former state attorneys general, both Republican and Democratic, appealed to the Supreme Court on Siegelman's behalf, arguing that his prosecution for something that nobody has ever been prosecuted for before, quote, will stifle the legal ability of campaigns to raise needed funds for fear of politically motivated prosecution of themselves and their donors, unquote. That's 113 former state attorneys general, both Republican and Democrats, who interceded on Siegelman's behalf. The Supreme Court declined to hear the case earlier this year, and Siegelman, who had already served 9 months some years earlier, was sentenced to 78 months in federal prison, 6.5 years, where he must report by, ironically enough, September 11th of this year. It's about a week and a half away. His daughter, Dana, has begun a petition campaign for a pardon from President Obama. Please sign it via donsiegelman.org. Arguing that, quote, a grave injustice has been done in this case that taints the very fabric of our democracy. And I got to say, I agree with his daughter, Dana. We've spoken with the governor before several times over the years. Honored for him to join us again. Governor, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Oh, Brad, thanks so much. I was listening attentively with your description, and it's on point. I just want to bring your listeners back to 2002.
Yeah,
I was gearing up. I was running for reelection. Had I won reelection, I was going to enter some of the southern presidential primaries mm-hmm. leading up to the 2004 election. I had been touted as a dark horse candidate for the Democratic nomination by conservative business journals such as the Kiplinger Letter. Karl Rove wanted me out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
We have sworn testimony before the House Judiciary Committee that Karl Rove targeted me through the Department of Justice. I was pursued by the wife of Karl Rove's best friend, mm-hmm. who had been vetted by Karl Rove as the U.S. attorney in Alabama. She was joined by Karl Rove's client, the state attorney general, in their quest to have me indicted. actually, it was a smear campaign running into the 2002 election. And then when I won the election anyway, it was Karl Rove's partner and Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff's employee who claimed credit for stealing the election and swinging the election to my opponent, whose campaign was being run by the U.S. attorney's husband, who was Karl Rove's best friend. People might, they're going to ask a couple of questions. They're going to say, why did Karl Rove care? Well, because I was a Southerner who was a Democrat, a liberal Democrat in a Southern Republican state mm-hmm. who was winning elections despite the attacks of the Republicans. They couldn't stop me fair and square, so they targeted me with this prosecution. So said the Republican Attorney General from Arizona, who was John McCain's co-campaign, national campaign chairman in 2008. We have people on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, as you pointed out, who mm-hmm. are saying that, you know, I was targeted. This is nothing but politics. So people will ask, well, how did he get convicted of bribery? Well, I was convicted of bribery because of the sworn testimony of one person who was a felon whom the prosecutors went to and said, if you will tell us what we want to know so we can convict this guy, Siegelman, we will recommend no time in prison for you. The guy was facing 40 to 100 years in jail. They offered him a deal he couldn't refuse. He testified.
And he was the one, Governor, if I can just break in, he was the fella who was actually coached. We have evidence that he was coached by the prosecutors as to how to give his testimony, that there are notes written, as I understand it, by the prosecutor in this guy's notebook explaining to him the things that he should say during the trial, correct?
Exactly. As explained in an expose by 60 Minutes mm-hmm. on February 24th, 2008, there were Go ahead.
There's a couple of points I want to ask you, because I've been following this case, as you know, for years. We've talked several times throughout the years, and I don't want to relitigate what happened, but listen, I'm an accountability guy. I want to see people held accountable when they've broken the law, and it seems to me pretty clear that you've been railroaded here now throughout this entire matter, and I hope to talk about that 2002 election, by the way, and what happened in the middle of the night on the Diebold voting systems out there. But when you were sentenced just a couple of weeks ago, I guess, earlier in August, you said to the judge, and I'm going to quote some quotes here, quote, "The hardest thing for me personally is knowing that I've let my family down. As a father, I have no greater wish than to have my children be proud of me. I do have deep regrets and remorse for my actions. I'd like to apologize to the people of Alabama for the embarrassment my actions have caused. If I had known I was coming close to the line where a campaign contribution becomes a bribe and a crime, I would have stopped." What do you mean? You say you have deep regrets and remorse for your actions. What do you regret if, in fact, you're being railroaded here? What do you regret having done in this case?
Well, there are lots of things that I regret. One, I hired this guy that ended up being a crook, and nobody saw it, nobody knew it.
That's the guy who testified against you. We're talking about,
yeah,
right?
He ended up taking $200,000 from various people, and nobody saw that, and he testified that, of course, I didn't know anything about it and didn't get a penny of it. But I do regret that I did not foresee these things coming, and I do regret the embarrassment that it has caused the state. But it wasn't because of anything that I did. I mean, I am facing a prosecutor who was anointed by Bush. I'm facing a judge who was anointed by Bush. I am now facing an 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is headed by someone who was Karl Rove's client. I mean, I am facing, the prosecutor is Rove appointed, mm-hmm. or Bush anointed, Rove anointed, Bush appointed, the judge, Rove anointed, Bush appointed, and the 11th Circuit, the head of the 11th Circuit, where all of my appeals go, the presiding judge was Karl Rove's client.
Yeah, I know he was. I mean, that's what's amazing to me. But it's amazing to me. That's why I don't understand when the Supreme Court, refuses to hear it, when, all the courts seem to go against you. Do you contend to this day that what you did, do you believe that what you did was not a crime, that this transaction that took place was not a crime?
No, it was... I offered a CEO of a Fortune 500 company a place on a part-time non-paying board on which he had served through three previous governors. I was the fourth governor to appoint this guy to the same board. There was no agreement. He didn't even want to serve on the board. He asked me, "Governor, do I have to?" And I said, he was tired of being on the board. He had just resigned from the board. I recruited him to be on the board. This man served 5 years in prison for something he did not do. And I am about to go to prison for something I did not do. But, this whole thing is much larger than Don Siegelman. Even Don Siegelman spending time in prison for something that wasn't a crime. It is about our freedom, our Constitution, our justice system. It's about Karl Rove and Karl Rove's ability to hijack the Department of Justice and use it as a political weapon. And, Rove, when he was caught, he fired Republicans who wouldn't do his bidding.
Sure.
And replaced them with other U.S. attorneys. you know, what happened to me was just the reverse of that. You know, the Republican Attorney General in Alabama, you know, did what he wanted them to do. They pursued me. They prosecuted me. They knocked me out of the my reelection campaign in 2002 by stealing the election, as you mentioned, and then came back and prosecuted me, brought me to trial 1 month before my reelection in 2006 when I was going to be reelected to the office of governor in Alabama. So, this, you know, if they can do this to me, they can do it to anybody. And if Karl Rove gets back in power, you can bet your bottom dollar they're going to do it to other people. So it's not just about me. It's about our system of justice in America.
I got to take a break. Governor, hold on, please. You're listening to Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy Show, speaking with Governor Don Siegelman. Please stay tuned.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
I'm a man on fire, walking through your street with one guitar and two dancing feet. Only one desire that's left in me.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for a vacationing Mike tonight. I'm speaking with former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, who by September 11th, ironically, of this year, will have to report to federal prison for 78 months after his years-long railroad by Karl Rove and friends. After a transaction where this fella gave $500,000 to a charity that was that the governor had advocated for, and he got nothing in return, and somehow this is now literally a federal crime. 113 former states' attorneys general have fought in favor of Governor Siegelman here, but it so far has been to no avail, and now he is hoping for a pardon from Barack Obama. President Barack Obama, you can help out in that effort by stopping at donsiegelman.org and filling out that petition. Okay, Governor, what do you think now in this post-Citizens United era when you see these guys giving literally millions and millions of dollars to super PACs that they know are there to benefit these presidential candidates in light of what happened to you?
Well, that's a great segue because, you know, the issue here, you know, it started out as a political dirty trick with involving Karl Rove's client, who was the attorney general, who's now the chief judge on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. It involved Karl Rove's partner and Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff's employee who stole my election and kept me out of the 2004 presidential race. But the legal issue here, the legal issue is going to come back to haunt these people because the judge that convicted me did so on a standard that has never been used in this setting before. He allowed the jury to convict me of bribery on a implied theory that there was an implied, that there was an implied agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Before this case, there's always been it's always been assumed that the Supreme Court, when they talked about an explicitly asserted agreement, that meant that to commit a crime, you had to agree to give somebody something in exchange for your campaign contribution.
So to put it in layman's terms here, the quid pro quo has to be, I will give you this money if you will do X for me.
If you'll appoint me,
right.
If you'll vote in favor of my legislation or whatever. Well, now, under this new legal theory that was used to send me to prison, it only juries can infer that there was an agreement. So, you know, the Koch brothers and all these other folks who are pumping this money in, if they get anything in return, they can be, if there is a prosecutor out there
yeah.
who wants to charge them, or charge the president if he appoints them to something, or if there's a congressman who votes in favor of their legislation, even though there is no testimony or no evidence of any kind of quid pro quo, what we understood to be a quid pro quo before this case, they can still convict them on the inference that there was evidence of an implied quid pro quo. So that's why we have these.
So to be clear, Governor, so there was no evidence that said you had made any kind of promise to this guy, to Richard Scrooge, in exchange for supporting the charity.
No evidence of that whatsoever.
You're going away for 6.5 years, and meanwhile, Sheldon Adelson or the Koch brothers, they can literally brag about giving millions and millions, to Mitt Romney. Hundreds of millions. Use our private planes if you want, whatever. That's all just fine. But what you did, it's amazing.
And keep in mind, Brad, and I want your listeners to keep in mind, what was my motive? My motive was to send disadvantaged kids to college for free, for goodness sake.
Well, shame on you.
It wasn't a self-enrichment scheme, as is the case in most bribery convictions.
Governor, I know, can you hang on for a few minutes and we'll do another segment after the top of the hour? You don't mind? Okay, I appreciate that. Governor Don Siegelman, hang on the line there and sign that petition asking the president to do the right thing and pardon this man at donsiegelman.org. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show with Don Siegelman. Stay tuned. We're going to hold him over for just one more segment, and then your calls, 877-520-1150, and some green news. Hang in there. Truth Seekers, this is your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow here for one more hour with you. We'll be getting to some of your calls. I know some of you have been hanging on for a while. Keep hanging in there. Our phone number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Stop by our chat room at bradblog.com. Sponsored by Scribble Live. Thank you very much, guys. You can also tweet me at the Bradblog, and you can find us on the Facebook, also at the Bradblog. You can also find my guest, Don Siegelman, and a link to a petition to President Obama for a pardon over at Facebook I think you search for Free Don Siegelman. Thanks to one of the chatters in the chat room for that information. Otherwise, you can go to donsiegelman.org. Okay, I asked the governor to hang on here with me for just another minute or two because I had a few questions I wanted to get through. But to reset, former Democratic Governor Don Siegelman served from 1999 to 2003 until he was essentially railroaded. And I can see no other way to put that, by Karl Rove and the U.S. Department of Justice for something that has never been a crime before in the history of this country. And by September 11th of this year, unless something happens, I know he's appealed his sentencing, unless something happens, he's going back to federal prison for 6.5 years, and he'll be leaving his wife and his daughter for 6.5 years for something that has never been a crime in the history of this country. But I had a few more questions I wanted to run through very quickly here with the governor. Are you still there, Governor?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm ready.
All right, good.
I've got some things for your listeners too, but go ahead.
I bet you do. Okay. All right. Well, let's fly through these then very quickly. How was your case different? This is something that really, really, I got to say, ticks me off. How was what happened here in your case different from what happened to the powerful Republican senator from Alaska, Ted Stevens, who he has since died, but he was charged with taking millions in bribes before seeing his case dropped by the Obama Department of Justice when they came to power. What happened there that his case was dropped and your case moved forward? Do you understand the difference that what happened here? Can you help me understand this, Governor?
Well, I think that the Republican power brokers worked their will with the powers that be, but he was let off the hook
because he was a Republican.
Well, I think in part, but also because there was prosecutorial misconduct in his case. My problem with the Ted Stevens case is not that his case was dismissed and the charges vacated, but the prosecutorial misconduct in my case makes everything else pale in comparison.
I agree. That's why I don't.
We've got Republican lawyers and a Republican Department of Justice employee, a whistleblower, who came forward and testified about how they coached the witness and how this was all a setup by Karl Rove. I want to get in a couple of things real quickly before I know you've got to go. You've got other things to talk about.
Okay, go ahead. I had a couple more questions, but go ahead and get in what you like to, please.
Well, I wanted to address your listeners. I know that most people don't want to believe that in this country that we would torture people to get information. They don't want to believe that we would authorize illegal wiretaps. They don't want to believe that we would be led into war under false pretenses. They don't want to believe that elections in this country are stolen or that their Department of Justice could be used as a weapon to win elections. Yeah, I want to talk about two people involved in my campaign, my reelection campaign that was stolen. One was Karl Rove's client, who was rewarded by being appointed to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and there he sits today as the Chief Justice of the 11th Circuit.
Overseeing your case, correct?
Overseeing my case.
Right.
This is the guy as Karl Rove's client, and I'll have to say this. The guy is basically intellectually honest, but when it came down to the crunch, when Rove said, "Stop this recount," I had won my election. They had stolen it. I wanted a recount in one little tiny precinct in this Republican county, and it was Karl Rove's client who stood in the way and participated in the stealing of my election.
Explain what happened, Governor, the night of that election when, as I understand it, as you've told me in the past, you went to bed thinking you won the election.
I had won the election. The votes were counted. It was done. The poll watchers, the party officials, the media had been sent home. I was declared the winner of the 2002 gubernatorial election in Alabama by CBS, NBC, everybody said the election's over, Sigelman won. Then after midnight, the lights go out in the courthouse in the South Alabama county, and in the sheriff's office, there is a quote recount. Nobody's there to watch the recount. They just shift 5,000 votes of mine to my opponent, the Karl Rove supported candidate. And oddly enough, while it affects my race, it doesn't impact any down ballot race by one single vote. So they take 5,000 votes from the governor's race and move it from the Democratic column to the Republican column, but it doesn't impact any down ballot race.
And this was done
impossible.
This was done electronically, correct?
Yes,
it was the tabulators. Now, were these touchscreen machines down there or paper ballot systems there?
It was a paper ballot.
Paper ballot system, but it was an electronic tabulator where the numbers changed.
Yeah,
shifted.
It was, yeah, yeah, it, And there have been study after study by universities, mm-hmm. professors, and they have concluded that there is no explanation other than the votes were stolen. So, but the guys that was given credit, I mean, the one who stopped the recount was Karl Rove's client, who was then appointed to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. The people given credit were Karl Rove's partner and this guy that went to work for Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff.
And they would not let you count those paper ballots? The numbers shifted on the tabulator, but they would not let you count the actual ballots to see what they the paper ballots.
That's all we asked for. And what was so odd was that the local officials, even though they were Republicans, the local officials invited me in to count the ballots. But Karl Rove's client stepped in and said, anybody that touches those ballots is going to jail. Now, I want to shift quickly to the judge who tried my case. He was vetted by Karl Rove, appointed by George Bush, as an interim appointee. He had a little sideline business called DOS Aviation. DOS Aviation was a company that was being funneled Defense Department contracts through his godfather, who was the congressman from the district, and also from other state official, Republican officials, U.S. senators. But my point here is that here is this guy who's a federal judge, and he has this sideline business of refueling planes, training pilots, and providing uniforms for the FBI as well as U.S. Air Force pilots. In the course of my trial, he is notified that he is up for a $200 million a year contract. And at the conclusion of my trial, he is granted that $200 million a year renewable Defense Department contract. The whole thing stinks to high heaven. And I know I am not one of the conspiracy theorists. You know, I'm not generally one of those guys who comes up with these, you know, weird things that don't seem to make sense unless you start connecting the dots and then it appears to be something.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that this is a matter of fact, that during the trial he was told he was up for this contract. At the conclusion of the trial, he was given the contract by the United States government.
Governor, I think after what you've gone through here, it's you don't have to apologize for being a conspiracy theorist. There was clearly a conspiracy going on. It's not a theory. When your votes disappear in the middle of the night, only in your race, and they will not let you count the votes, that's obviously something is going on here. What they have gone through for the years and years after that, to take you down as, you know, God forbid there should be a powerful, likable, well-respected Democrat in the state of Alabama. It doesn't go along, with the solid South theory of Karl Rove and friends. And it just, you're right, it stinks to high heaven. Listen, I got to get to a break. I know you've been given permission to go to the Democratic National Convention next week to make your case there. Do you think there's a chance that the folks at the DNC and that President Obama will at some point see what has happened here and give you the pardon that you clearly deserve, in my opinion?
Well, I one can only hope. This is bigger than me, and that's the point I want to make with your listeners. This is not, yes, I want to be free. I don't want to go to jail for something I didn't do. I don't want to lose more time in my life fighting over something like this, but this is bigger than me. It is bigger than my freedom. It is about your freedom, this country's freedom. It's about restoring justice and preserving our democracy, and that's why, you know, yes, I encourage people to go online and sign this petition, donsigelman.org, Free Don. But this is something, this is a message that has to be taken to the president and has to be taken to the American people. We cannot tolerate this kind of behavior in this country if our democracy and our freedoms are going to be sustained.
Governor, I hear you. And I think it's interesting that you said in the previous break, if it could happen to me, it could happen to anyone. That is something that we heard one of the delegates at the Republican National Convention saying in the first hour. after this uprising by the Ron Paul folks out there, when the Republican Party just shut them out, and they were complaining about what the Republicans were doing to Republicans, and one of the delegates said, if it could happen to us, it could happen to anyone. We're hearing that a lot. We're hearing that too much. I thank you, frankly, for your service to your country and to your state. I wish you the best of luck next week at the DNC, the best of luck with a pardon from the president. And good luck if you do end up going away here in a week or so. My best luck to you and your family, sir.
Well, I am going away, but I will be speaking as loudly as I can about this, not again, not just because of me, but because of my love for this country and for our freedoms that we need to protect.
Thank you
so much, Brad.
Thank you, Governor. Governor Don Siegelman, you can check out that petition for his pardon from President Obama, the appeal for pardon from President Obama, at donsiegelman.org. All right. We ran a little long there, so we're going to have to come back. It's going to have to be a short segment. And then we will try to get to your calls, 877-520-1150. Hopefully we'll have some time for Desi Doyen and some green news. Brother. And guess what else happened this week? No charges in the CIA detainee death investigations. Go figure. Cheer up, America. This is your Mike Malloy Show. Can't get much worse, can it? You're listening to Brad. Stay tuned.
It's a long, hard road. It's a long, hard road. It's a long, hard road. Lady Farm will be free.
Well, I've been down so goddamn long that it looks like a
So, Don Siegelman is going to jail for something that has never been a crime, for receiving no, financial benefits for what happened. And contrast that with this story that we have from ABC yesterday. The U.S. government said Thursday it had closed its investigation into the alleged torture of more than 100 detainees held by the CIA in overseas prisons, and the deaths of two men who died while in CIA custody, without prosecuting anyone. The Justice Department's announcement Thursday that it would not bring charges in the deaths of terror suspects Ghul Rahman and Manadel al-Jamadi formally ended a multi-year probe by Assistant U.S. Attorney John Durham into the CIA's controversial enhanced interrogation program. Based on the fully developed factual record concerning the two deaths, the department has declined prosecution because the admissible evidence would not be sufficient to obtain and sustain a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt, said Attorney General Eric Holder in a statement released Thursday afternoon. Rahman, a suspected Afghan militant, died in 2002 in a CIA prison known as the Salt Pit, when he was left shackled to a cement floor in a near-freezing room. Iraqi prisoner Manadel al-Jamadi died in the infamous Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq in 2003, only hours after he was captured by the military. In a statement, ACLU Deputy Legal Director Jamil Jeffer called the Justice Department's decision, quote, nothing short of a scandal. The Justice Department has declined to bring charges against the officials who authorized torture, the lawyers who sought to legitimate it, and the interrogators who used it, said Jaffer. It has successfully shut down every legal suit meant to hold officials civilly liable. Today's decision not to file charges against individuals who tortured prisoners to death is yet another entry in what is already a shameful record. Former CIA Director Michael Hayden applauded the decision to close the inquiry. Assistant U.S. Attorney Durham was initially appointed by Attorney General Michael Mukasey in January of 2008 to investigate the destruction of waterboarding videotapes by CIA official Jose Rodriguez. No charges were filed at the conclusion of that investigation either. And yet, Don Siegelman is going to jail for 6.5 years for doing nothing. Stay tuned.
If we weren't so down, we'd up. Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go, and the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go. Well, they gave me some beans for my last meal with 23 minutes to go.
23 minutes. Yeah, that's what we got. 23 minutes right here on your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Filling in for Mike tonight. Monday is Labor Day. I think we're going to have a best of Mike Malloy on Monday. And then he'll be back with you on Tuesday. So that's your schedule for the weekend ahead. 877-520-1150. Thank you guys very much for hanging on the line here. Gary in Minneapolis, sorry you had to hang on so long, but I do appreciate it. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Gary.
I can always hold on to somebody that's being railroaded into 6.5 years of prison for Karl Rove. No problem.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
I wanted to thank you and Tony for playing the Dickie's version of Giganter.
That was you. Okay, great.
That was from the legendary Dickies from Los Angeles. I called the guitarist after I heard it on and said, "Hey, I think I heard you on KTLK. I think you're on there." And I wanted to dedicate it to the special person who called C-SPAN about a month or two ago and asked the Romney supporter if he had a big package. He didn't actually say package, but, you know, we're on the radio, so.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate that. Any other thoughts? I got some other callers to get to.
I always save my election questions for you when you're on. Number one, I heard on Bill Moyers, they had some election people on. Unfortunately, you weren't one of them, but they said maybe we should do like Canada does and have people register, so once they're on there, they're on there for good. And then the other two things I heard today, you can respond to me offline if you want, or once I get off. Mike Papantonio said maybe Obama should have Election Day as a national holiday, which would be good. And then the other thing he said, and I haven't heard this before, they're thinking of having a bunch of teabagger people show up at polling places. Like they're trying to get a million people together so they can go and intimidate people with cameras. And I was thinking maybe we could get them to do the opposite. We could film them doing it to us.
Okay, and I'll hit all of those questions here. Let me see if I can remember them. Yes, we ought to have universal registration for everyone, period. It's the whole idea of registration at all is really just a way to keep people from voting. Number two, what was the number two?
National holiday.
National holiday, absolutely a national holiday for Election Day, but in my opinion, change it to Wednesday so people don't just use that national holiday to take a long weekend and not vote at all. And then, Tony likes the new holiday. All right. And the third question, this phony partisan group called True the Vote, and I really had hopes for them from the beginning, but they are a right-wing group. They are out there. They are not watching the polls. They are not protecting the polls. They are harassing voters. I hate to see it because I like to see more eyeballs. I talked to the founder of this group, Catherine Engelbrecht, 2 years ago. We covered her. Go look at bradblog.com and search for True the Vote. I wrote about her and how she responded to my questions. These are the groups that are pretending that Democrats are out there stealing elections and, they're going to catch them and catch all of these dead voters showing up and these non-citizen voters showing up. And it's frankly nonsense. That said, the more people watching, the better. I wish there was more people from all sides, from all parties, the entire process, including the counting, so what happened with Don Siegelman can't happen. I hope the folks from True the Vote figure it out. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, very well. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and by the way, don't make me read. I brought it in here, but the huge list of very, very high-profile Republicans beginning
with Mitt Romney, who appeared to have committed voter fraud in this country.
Massachusetts.
It ain't an epidemic of a Democratic voter fraud going on. There sure is a hell of a lot of it going on by Republicans, though. Thanks, Gary.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, take care. Let me get to very quickly Beverly in Beverly in Carson City, Nevada. Welcome
Yahoo.
To the Mike Malloy Show, Beverly.
Listen, very quickly, everybody in this country should know Don Siegelman's story. Very quickly, I'll get this question out of the way before going to Siegelman. Voter ID and all the discussions I've heard over these many months, mm-hmm. I have never the angle about a sample ballot. I get a sample ballot prior to voting, mm-hmm. and I take my sample ballot to the district, and I present it to the guy at the front door mm-hmm. gate, and he acknowledges my name and hands me a ballot, and I go vote. Can't people just take the sample ballot with them?
Oh, of course, of course they can, Beverly.
Then how
but
come no one's ever brought that up?
Well, because that's not the point. It's not good enough. Now you said voter ID, and earlier in the show I had a rant about this. Voter ID is not a problem. It's photo ID restrictions. Polling place photo ID restrictions. Yes, there are many states that require some form of voter ID. That's not a problem. A sample ballot, a registration card. But the Republicans are taking those options away. They don't want you to use that as ID.
That
yeah. No, I said out in South Carolina, for example, there were three things that you could use as ID when you went to vote: a state-issued driver's license, a state-issued photo ID, or your voter registration card that they mail to all voters. That's
right.
Been the law in South Carolina for years. It wasn't a problem, and now they came in and they said everything but that last one. They were taking away the right to bring in a voter registration card to identify yourself. And that is what has been stopped by the Department of Justice. It'll probably be stopped by a federal three-judge federal panel, I hope. It's on trial this week. But, yeah, no, that's perfectly good, Beverly, that sample ballot. The Republicans won't accept it because they don't want you to vote. That's the story here.
Oh, no, I got that. Listen, very quickly, regarding Siegelman, very quickly, if I was his daughter, I would contact Madonna or Lady Gaga. And because Madonna, when she was in Russia, everybody quoted her regarding the three women that were giving Putin a bad time and so forth. And my point is, you need some celebrity like Madonna or Lady Gaga that when they scratch their nose, everybody covers their
I hear you. I hope they're listening tonight. I hope they come to his aid.
Tell Siegelman's daughter to, and listen, very quickly, if I was Siegelman and if I was facing prison, I'd seek political asylum at the Russian embassy. That would make the headlines.
Indeed it would. Beverly, I got to roll. I appreciate your call and your good ideas there. All right, Desi Doyen joins us. Do we have time for green news even at this point, Tony? We're going to get it in? It's going to be close. Hey, Des.
Hey, let's play it now.
Play it now?
Yeah, before we run out of time.
Come on, bring it. The Green News Report.
I woke up, it was fine. Next minute, it was just like all over the place. Everything underwater, everything.
This wasn't supposed to be a Katrina. It's turning out for the East Bank to be as bad, if not worse.
Flooding, evacuations, and levee breaching as Tropical Storm Isaac moves inland. But too little too late for Midwest farmers and as House Republicans cut weather monitoring agencies. Hip deep in rhetoric at the Republican National Convention, plus...
Will this be a country that keeps moving away from foreign oil and towards renewable sources of energy like wind and solar and biofuels?
President Obama uses the C word.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Oh, the speeches, the pageantry, the fun. It was like Christmas morning if Santa kept all the gifts for himself and filled stockings with clean coal.
Yeah, I've been watching that Republican National Convention, too. This is your Green News Report.
Okay, Des, some very exciting news as we go to air today. Of course, you know that BP has a great interest in the Gulf Coast.
Indeed.
And in Louisiana. And the good news is that after the oil company made $7.7 billion in profit in the fourth quarter of 2011 and $6 billion in profit in the first quarter of this year, it has decided to donate to relief costs from Hurricane Isaac. They will be donating $1 million.
Ooh, a whole $1 million.
That's right. Very, very thoughtful of them.
Indeed. Well, Hurricane Isaac has weakened into a tropical storm again as it moves inland, still packing relentless rain and flooding and spawning a few tornadoes. President Obama has declared federal emergencies for Louisiana and Mississippi, releasing federal funds. And Louisiana's Republican Governor Bobby Jindal warned the danger is not over yet.
We're going to continue to see the weather effects of the storm, especially as it moves to the northern part of our state. On the east bank in Plaquemines Parish, there was overtopping near Braithwaite at a non-federal levee. They are considering actually doing a breach intentionally to release water.
And as we go to airtime, it appears that they will be breaching that levee to release some of that pressure. So far, it appears that the $14 billion in post-Katrina infrastructure repairs and upgrades to that federal levee system have held up to this first major test. In 2005, 1,800 people died in the flooding after the levees failed in Katrina. With Isaac, only two fatalities have been reported so far, but hundreds did have to be rescued from their rooftops and attics in flooded areas outside New Orleans.
Which is a point I should add that Breitbart.com's editor-in-chief, Mike Flynn, told me last night on Twitter he thought it was hysterical.
That's funny?
Well, he was watching Weather Channel and thought that they were making a lot out of nothing, despite the fact that hundreds and hundreds of homes were flooded out from this storm.
Unbelievable.
Breitbart.
In Mississippi on Thursday morning, officials ordered an immediate evacuation of residents near a dam on the Mississippi-Louisiana border as a precaution due to fears of a potential dam failure due to Isaac's relentless rainfall. Now, on the plus side, Tropical Storm Isaac is forecast to deliver much-needed rain to the parched Midwest, but that heavy rain may severely impact what's left of the U.S. corn and soy crops that are already decimated by this summer's record drought. While the Gulf Coast is getting hammered by Isaac, just want to point out that the Republican House majority partying in Tampa all week voted for severe cuts to our weather monitoring agencies, nearly $500 million from the National Weather Service and nearly $1 billion from FEMA. And House Republicans are proposing even deeper cuts in the lame duck session after the election.
Lame indeed.
Speaking of the Republican National Convention in Tampa, the rhetoric is flowing hip deep and keeping the fact checkers very busy. But unlike the 2008 convention, the party of climate science denial has been curiously low-key this time around on energy policy. So far, no chance of drill, baby, drill, perhaps because the majority of Americans support federal clean energy investment over oil, and the GOP does not.
Also, absolutely no talk of climate change and global warming after the hottest summer on record in the history of the U.S.
Yeah, they've only had a handful of pot shots at the Obama administration, like this jab from Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell.
And now the EPA is the Employment Prevention Agency.
Of course, McDonnell is lying. The actual data shows that new pollution controls at power plants, for example, create tens of thousands more domestic jobs than are lost by federal regulations. Finally, one politician this week did mention the C word, climate change. Out of nowhere, President Obama, at a campaign speech at Iowa State University this week, said the forbidden words.
The decisions we make as a country on big issues like the economy and jobs and taxes and education and energy and war and climate change, all these decisions will directly affect your life.
Wow, climate change. Haven't heard the president mention that word either for a very long time.
Yep.
For much more on the stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report so we can keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. Follow us on Twitter at Green News Report and find us and like us on the Facebook. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Okay, well, it is raining again in Midwest, Des. That's the good news. I know you had some updates since that report on the Mississippi Dam.
We have very little time. So the Mississippi Dam has not been breached. They're still evacuated. They're going to assess the safety of the dam, make sure that it's still cool. What I did want to point out is obviously we recorded that yesterday before the final night of the RNC and Mitt Romney's speech. And what he did say, the only time that really climate change was given any real time was when Mitt Romney mocked it and said, yes, that President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans. And everybody thought that was
so funny. Yeah.
Hilarious when there's a flooding going on in Louisiana and Mississippi and people are dying. Two people died.
It was quite surprising that they didn't spend more time. But I guess when you got a hurricane and when you got all of that heat, that they didn't spend more time making global warming cracks and jokes. But
I think they're trying to not talk about it because obviously they don't believe in it, and they realize that most of America, a majority of Americans, believe that climate change is happening and that the government should do something about it. Even Republicans believe that. And I also just want to point out that they lied. Obama never said, "I promise," or any kind of, "let's, you know, I promise to bring the sea levels down." He said, "If we are willing to work for it, we could look back and tell our kids this was when the oceans began to go back down again." So he never said it. He promised that. He said, "We should all work for this, and if we do, then we can look back and say."
Instead, this is when our kids will look back and look at clips from the RNC and see guys like Mitt Romney making fun of global warming.
Yeah, Chris Hayes, I think, tweeted that this is going to be in all the documentaries after 2050.
All right. Thank you, Des. Good job. Dave, stay on the line. I want to talk to you. We're going to take one last break, and we're back on the Mike Malloy Show. Something going out to our friends in Louisiana who are still fighting the rains and the rising waters. Good luck to y'all down there. My thanks tonight to, engineer Tony Sorrentino is back. Thank you, Tony. Great job. Appreciate it. Here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. Of course, to producer Desi Doyen, to super-duper associate producer Margot Paez, all the folks in the chat room, all the listeners out there, to my guest Don Siegelman. Please jump over to donsiegelman.org and sign that petition to the president for a pardon there, and otherwise spread the word far and wide about this outrage. Also, thanks to the folks at Scribble Live, scribblelive.com, for allowing us the use of their chat room software tonight. Much appreciated, guys. And let's see if we can fit in Dave in Arcata, California. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Well, Brad, for several years now, I have much appreciated your efforts, but I have long found you to be a very cautious, guarded gentleman. That is, at least you had been, too much so, in my opinion, because no question in my mind, but that psychopaths have taken over our country. They do it by rigging elections. This electronic voting equipment is designed to rig elections. Words like undependable, unreliable, they no longer apply. Willful, deliberate election fraud is all we can talk about. People need to be aware of it. That's what my message is to the world.
Thank you, Dave. It's a very good message, and it's always good to hear from you, my friend. Thanks for touching base, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, brother. It's hard to disagree. It really is. Man. My thanks also tonight, of course, as ever, to Kathy and Mike Malloy. They're going to be back with you on Tuesday. Got a holiday coming up this Monday. Somebody's got to enjoy themselves. This is going to get ugly before it gets less ugly between now and November. But if you're looking for me, in the meantime, I will be at bradblog.com. I'm on the Twitters at TheBradBlog, where I hope you'll follow me, and on the Facebook, where I hope you will like me. I think we're just the Brad Blog. So find us, or like, share, like. That's it, like. See, I'm not a big Facebook guy. I'm a Twitter guy. I likes the Twitter. The Facebook, I'm warming up to it. So find us over there and like us over there. My thanks, as always, to all of you listeners for tuning in, for finding us. Please keep making noise out there. Please let everyone know about what we've been talking about here tonight. Please let everyone know that the concern is not voter ID. It is polling place photo ID restrictions, and it is voter suppression. That's the fight. That's the fight that's going to happen between now and November. You people are going to have to wage it. Please be on the right side of this war. All right. Good night, guys. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. We'll talk to you soon. Keep it lit, America.